You're listening to continuing coverage in the suitcase murder, the trial of Sarah Boone, from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
The objection is overruled.
So, we've been talking about the importance of doing a comprehensive evaluation with as many collateral sources as one could possibly have when making an assessment about the battered spouse syndrome, correct?
Yes, sir. Relevant piece of information. Yes, sir.
And would you agree that obviously the person who is accused of committing a crime, there are credibility issues that you do need to care for when relying upon that person's history provided about the events leading to that and the past events describing the relationship with the intimate partner?
Yes, sir. In every forensic evaluation, that's the case.
Is this particularly important if there's a comorbidity with an alcohol abuse disorder?
Yes.
And can you tell the jury what alcohol abuse disorder means in the DSM-5-TR?
Sure. It's the biggest part of it is it's not just the use of alcohol, it's impairment that happens as a result. So it's the excessive use of alcohol, but that could mean something different, just like the excessive use of marijuana might mean. But it's the use of alcohol to the degree that it impairs or infects a person's life. And with that may come a lot of other things like deceitfulness or aggression or unreliability, sleep or somatic problems, difficulties. So, but the important thing to remember there is that it's the use of a substance that impairs or affects a person's life.
And if there is alcohol involved in the histories being given about either the event in question or any preceding events, must the evaluator take that into account when evaluating the memories and perceptions of the person giving them that history?
Yes, so in introducing that new topic about memory, we know that substances can interfere and impair memory. So as a result of that, you'd want to know what they were using, how close it was. If you're talking about a particular event, like a crime, you'd want to know if there was substance usage, and if so, what the person's memory functioning was, and does that match up with other sources of information about what those events were.
Are you familiar with the narcissistic personality disorder?
Yes, sir, of course.
Is that something recognized in the DSM-5-TR?
Yes, sir.
And can you tell us whether or not a person who is giving a history, whether it's the patient slash client or whatnot, has traits, perhaps not a diagnosis, but even just traits of the narcissistic personality disorder, is that something the evaluator should account for in evaluating the credibility of the history given?
Yes.
And why is that?
Well, because all forms of disorders or conditions or just traits may lead to inaccurate information, either not purposely or purposely. They may be deceptive. So certain personality disorders or traits can lead to deception or inappropriate or inaccurate information. That's why you need more than one source of information. Is what this person saying to me check out with other sources of information?
And I don't mean to quiz you on it, but can you tell us some of the criteria for the narcissistic personality disorder?
I can, yes, sir. So it is a grandiose sense of self-worth. It's the consideration of yourself over anybody else. It's kind of operating your own world, so it's an inflated sense of who you are. It's a misperception of how important you are to other people and your meaning to other people. It's a sense of specialness, that you stand out from other people in terms of special skill or skills, and that other people, if they don't recognize that, they should recognize that. So the biggest heading there is an inflated sense of self-esteem and grandiosity.
Are you familiar with an adjustment disorder diagnosis?
Yes, sir.
And is that in the DSM-5-TR?
Yes, sir, correct.
Can you tell us about that?
Adjustment disorder is a person's reaction, and it could be emotional, it can be behavioral, or it can be both, to a situation that occurs. You broke up with your boyfriend or girlfriend, so you're upset about that. And so as a result, you're tearful, you're anxious or nervous or worried about what may happen to you as a result of breaking up with them, or you behaviorally may start not going to work, or get into more arguments or fights with your children as a result. So it's a temporary reaction to a stressful situation that occurs in some individuals.
And hypothetically, if a person who is giving a history for criteria of diagnosis, let me strike that. If somebody is giving a history and that is being used to come to an evaluation conclusion of battered spouse syndrome. If that person has been diagnosed with adjustment disorder predating the traumatic relationship, is that something the evaluator should take into account?
You'd want to know any prior diagnosis because it may not necessarily be exclusionary, but it could. So adjustment disorder is a temporary reaction. You're upset in a temporary period, and most of them just go away on their own. Whereas something else like a traumatic stress disorder is long-term. It's something that a person's stuck with for a period of time that usually doesn't just go away on its own. So yes, you'd want to know that for that term I used before, that differential diagnosis. You'd want to know those things to compare and contrast them and hold them up against each other.
Now, hypothetically, if somebody says things like, I'm the best thing that has ever happened to you, and I'm the best you'll ever do, are those indications of the narcissistic personality disorder?
Well, they could be. You wouldn't want just that alone. You'd want to see if that was happening in other settings. Is that happening on the job, with friends, with family members? Is it showing up on psychological testing? But certainly that would be a red flag. You'd go, I want to pay more attention to that. I want to investigate that further.
And is it important when evaluating trauma-based disorders, because they're based on emotional reactions, to do that rule out on alcohol or drug use?
Certainly you'd want to do that. It's not usually disguised as a trauma-based disorder. Alcohol and trauma aren't usually rule outs for each other, but it could exacerbate a condition. It could make you diagnose a trauma condition when it's just an adjustment disorder. I say just, I don't mean to minimize it, but it's not as serious as a trauma-based disorder.
Is it important to consider whether the abuser and or the abused behave differently in the absence of alcohol or drugs?
Yes.
And why is that?
Well, because you're trying to analyze a psychological condition. If as a result of drug or alcohol abuse, their behavior changes or their perceptions change, that's not a psychological condition, that's a substance abuse disorder. So that's why you'd want to know that. So if their condition remains the same, maybe it's a little worse when they're using drugs or alcohol, but it's the same perception of threat or danger, then you're going to diagnose a trauma-based disorder. If not, then you're going to diagnose a substance abuse disorder. You can have both, but you'd want to rule one out as opposed to the other.
And are you familiar with the classic three-step cycle of battered spouse syndrome or domestic violence?
Yes, sir, I am.
Can you explain that to the jury?
Sure. So there is a cycle of violence that was first developed by a woman in the 70s called Lenore Walker, Dr. Lenore Walker. She's a psychologist who's usually credited with developing the whole theory of battered spouse syndrome. And in the classic model, which we know oftentimes happens, not every time, but in the classic model, there's a period of tension buildup where things are happening, little arguments are happening, there's bickering back and forth, there may be some threats or some loud voices back and forth, but it's all things that are leading up to a possible violent episode. Then there's the episode that happens itself, the violent episode. It could be verbal, sexual, physical, but there's the violent incident that occurs. And then after that violent episode occurs, there's a honeymoon phase where the person who's done the abuse, they're apologizing, taking that person who was abused out to dinner, buying them things, saying nice things to them, complimenting them to sort of make up for the abuse. And it's kind of it's called the cycle of violence. And the reason why is it tends to repeat itself in a lot of these situations of battered spouse syndrome, where you see this repeating itself over and over and over again. So people are kind of stuck in these revolving doors in their relationship.
And can one cycle be enough to traumatize a person?
Yes.
Does this trauma necessarily have to be coming from a man to a woman?
No.
And in fact, as times have changed, language has changed, and so when we keep referring to it as battered woman syndrome in the courtroom today, what we're actually talking about now is battered spouse syndrome or even intimate partner violence.
Yes, sir. I mean, interpartner violence can happen outside of legal settings, but it's really a kind of the large overgrouping, if you will, to be able to talk about all of these other things that can happen as a result, like trauma-based disorders and battered spouse syndrome. And you're right. The later research has kind of pulled us away from thinking this only happens to women in heterosexual relationships. We know now there's all sorts of derivations and that men can suffer also from battered spouse syndrome, battered person syndrome, homosexual couples. So we know it goes around to everybody, but still, women are more often diagnosed with battered spouse syndrome than anybody else.
Does the trauma have to come in the form of physical violence?
No, sir.
Does it have to come in the form of sexual violence?
No, sir.
Can it come in the form of emotional or mental violence?
Yes, sir.
And would examples of that include such as running the partner down and telling them that they're no good and, you know, just general insulting and lowering their value?
It could. Remember, that's the stimulus, so it would depend on how the person who's receiving that responds to it as to whether or not it becomes traumatic. But yes, sir, that would be the first red flag you'd want to investigate.
And you mentioned isolation before. So if somebody in a hypothetical intimate partner setting is trying to isolate the partner from his or her family members or friends or coworkers, can that be, and I'm not saying necessarily, can that be indications of intimate partner violence that could lead to battered spouse syndrome?
So sure, that'd be an example of coercive control. So if a person was doing that, that's consistent with that classification of battered person syndrome. Yes.
And hypothetically, controlling another person, the intimate partner's personal property or effects, such as a birth certificate or identification papers, can that be indication of emotional trauma towards the partner who is lacking the control over those identification papers?
So that's a stimulus that could result, depending on how the person subjectively perceives it, in some trauma. So yes, all of the things that you mentioned could be stimulus, if you will, that a person could perceive as traumatic.
And hypothetically, if one partner, A, gives partner B a gift, such as a bicycle, but partner A continues to maintain that the bicycle is his or hers because he or she bought it, even though it was a gift of B, can that be a form of emotional abuse towards B?
Sure, it sounds like control, but I guess you could interpret it as emotional abuse too, but it sounds more like a control mechanism that'd be consistent.
I'm not suggesting that it's legally or morally okay, but when one intimate partner does these hypothetical emotional things, non-physical violent things to partner B, if partner B has poor personal skills and coping skills and maybe consuming alcohol, is it unreasonable or unfathomable to hear that partner B responded with physical violence to partner B?
Objection, assuming facts, not in evidence.
Sustained. Yes.
Argument of counsel, the objection is overruled.
So may I respond to that?
If you remember the question,
do.
Please go ahead.
So it would increase the probability of physical violence. So if those things, in fact, were perceived as threatening or abusive in any way or insulting to the person who they were directed towards, it would increase the probability of physical violence.
And then again, the perceptions are all in the eye of the beholder, whether emotional things that are said to one another or physical things are done to one another, whether the recipient of that behavior views it as trauma is a subjective decision by that person, right?
Yes, the perception is the impact. So that's how you would know that. It's just, you know, water off a duck's back, or is it something that kind of sticks with me and I think about it all the time?
Now, you mentioned earlier anxiety, low self-esteem, and depression can all be components of battered spouse syndrome, correct?
Correct.
Is it important as the evaluator to rule out whether or not these conditions predated the violent or abusive relationship?
Yes.
And why is that?
Well, because where things start is important diagnostically. So if all of those things were in place, all of the symptoms that were just mentioned are in place, then you wouldn't attribute those to the abuse. You'd say those things were pre-existing. Now, abuse could make it worse, but in terms of your diagnosis, you need to know where things started. So if those symptoms didn't start at the time where there was abuse that was alleged to have occurred, then it's unlikely that it's attributed to that abuse.
And independent of any narcissistic personality disorder traits, would you agree that anybody in a certain legal setting has a motivation to present themselves in a certain way?
Yes, to do impression management, either depending on the outcome. So if there's punitive sanctions, they may lie to make themselves look worse, or as a result, if they're in other settings, like divorce settings, they may lie to make themselves look better. So there's always some impression management you have to kind of look through in your evaluation.
And that's important for an evaluator?
It should be looked at in every evaluation.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any redirect examination?
Yes, sir. I just want to, one more time,
in response to the state's questioning, you indicated that where an individual's credibility may be in question, there is a necessity that the individual who's making the assessment do corroborate whatever they're being told. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, in a number of different ways. We have psychological tests that assess for things called malingering or faking mental health problems or difficulties. So you'd want to do that. You'd want to look at other evidence to see if it's all consistent. So it's very important you don't just rely on self-report.
Is it possible that an individual may exhibit one or two attributes of a particular DSM diagnosis, but not actually qualified because it's simply not there?
Right. Sure. So sometimes, like, social isolation can be because we're introverted, or it could be part of depression. So you need to kind of follow it out and see how many of the symptoms are there to see whether or not it meets the criteria.
So I may exhibit one or two symptoms of narcissism, but not qualify because I don't meet all of those, or a significant number of the indicators that you would rely upon to make that diagnosis.
Yes, sir. Or it can be situationally based, like we may display narcissistic features here in a courtroom, but may not do that in any other part of our life.
Now, in your experience, have you determined, learned, either through your studies, experience, and so on, whether or not the abusive behavior may begin based upon an individual's perception of things occurring to him as a child? Or her as a child. In other words, if they grow up in an abusive household.
Okay, I understand.
Objection. Hypothetical. Sustained.
You've indicated that there are things that, I think in response to the state's cross-examination, that there are things that may add to or may contribute to a particular psychosis or symptom. Would an individual's background as a child include those type of criteria?
Yes, sir. You're more vulnerable to certain psychological conditions based on your history. So if you've been traumatized before, or bad situations have happened to you before, if you've suffered from depression before, it makes you more vulnerable to those conditions or other conditions later on.
Finally, one question or one symptom that we haven't discussed, I don't think, or maybe it was discussed by the state, was learned helplessness. What is that?
Learned helplessness, I've really spoken about it a little bit, but now we have the fancy term for it. Learned helplessness was really researched by someone named Seligson, a doctor named Seligson, a psychologist, research psychologist. And just real briefly, what it is, it's when someone kind of gives up and feels like there's nothing that they can do to change their situation. It was originally done with laboratory animals. But where a person really feels that no matter what strategy they've taken, like leave, stay, fight, whatever it might be, it won't work. It usually leads to depression or developments of other strategies, like I have to appease or please or make sure I do everything correctly or apologize. So it's really believing that no matter what you do, it won't be effective.
Doctor, thank you for your testimony. Thank you for
yes, sir.
Traveling up here from Miami so early in the morning.
No problem at all.
Thanks for the rest.
You can be excused.
Thank you, sir. You can be excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Can the parties approach for a moment? Members of the jury, it is 10:40 at this time. We're going to go ahead and take that mid-morning break. Similar instruction I've given you over the last couple of days. I'm sure you're tired of hearing it, but I got to keep telling you. Please don't have any conversations among yourselves or anyone else about the persons, places, things, or charge involved in this case. And do not conduct any independent research on those things. We'll see you back here in about 15 minutes at 5 till 11. Thank you very much.
All right.
Y'all may be seated. Thank you. All right, we'll be in recess for approximately 15 minutes. Thank you. We are back on the record. 2020 CF 2603, State of Florida versus Sarah Boone. State.
Dave Kesshaw, on behalf of the state. Boone, Jay for the state.
Defense.
James Owen for Sarah Boone.
Tony Henderson for Sarah Boone.
Kevin Beck on behalf of Sarah Boone.
All right, Ms. Boone is still seated at counsel's table. Yes, Mr. Owens.
Judge, we had several lay witnesses that were scheduled. What was that for this? We've excused Detective Scott Lowen based on the testimony of Detective Copsel. We've excused Abraham Marino, who was going to be recalled based on the testimony of Detective Copsel. You've heard from the two deputies, you've heard from Dr. Brand. Maria Gallipoli is a young lady that's outside. She was a witness as a neighbor in that complex, and she would testify about observing physical injuries to Sarah Boone. We've spoken with her over the break that, in our opinions collectively, Tony Henderson and myself, that it's not necessary to call Ms. Gallipoli because we have other evidence of injuries. There was disagreement about that, but I believe that Ms. Boone is now in agreement that we're not going to call Ms. Gallipoli. So that leaves now calling the Orange County Sheriff's Department foam extraction expert.
Ms. Uwadden.
Yes, back to the stand, and we've got two short videos. These are the short videos relating to George Torres with the bat and then striking the TV. They're less than a minute apiece. The problem with that is because we've excused so many witnesses, that's our last witness. So we're going to be done here in probably 11:15, and then...
But Ms. Walker is supposed to be here at 1 o'clock?
That's correct.
Okay, all right.
And then I haven't had a chance to meet with Dr. Harper, but I'm going to meet with her at lunch over next door. And we anticipate Dr. Harper this afternoon. And then we may be really close to ending the defense's case.
Okay, great. Thank you for letting me know that.
We're going to have a gap here.
So okay, so...
Early lunch.
Well, yeah,
long lunch.
That may... Well... If you're saying that your presentation with Ms. Wadden is 15 minutes, I don't know what the cross is going to be. It may be de minimis, or you may be saving her for rebuttal. I don't know. Mr. Jay or Mr. Cacciatore?
I'm sorry.
As it relates to Ms. Wadden, CSI Tech, you're not calling her in rebuttal?
She had a predicate during her trial testimony during our case in chief for the exhibit I'm going to put in rebuttal.
Okay, awesome. So what we can do is we can proceed with Ms. Uwadden, and we could just take an early lunch and ask them to be back here maybe 12:50. So that way, if we have any issues, we can address them before we start at 1 o'clock. Ms. Boone, you were sworn this morning. I just got a couple of things to go over with you. There was a list of witnesses that was provided to the court last night and again this morning as potential witnesses that may be called in your defense. One of those witnesses was Maria Gallipoli. Your lawyers have advised that they may not be calling that person as a witness in this case. Do you understand that?
I do.
And again, similar to other conversations we've had, I don't want to go into any specifics of any conversations that you've had with any of your lawyers, just whether or not you've had them. Have you had conversations with your lawyers about calling Ms. Gallipoli as a witness?
Yes.
Have you had conversations with your attorneys about why they are deciding not to call her as a witness? And similar to what we discussed yesterday, do you understand that your attorneys make the trial strategy decisions, including what witnesses to call or not to call?
Yes.
Okay. Are you still satisfied with their representation of you in this matter?
Yes.
And are you still on board with the strategy that has been employed in your defense?
Yes.
Are you in agreement with the strategy not to call Ms. Gallipoli as a witness in this case?
I am.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. Then let's go ahead and bring our jury back in, and we can call Ms. Uwadden and go from there.
Mr. Right. Can you excuse Ms. Gallipoli?
All right, thank you very much. Let's go ahead and stand and bring back in our panel.
Mr. Owens, how do you spell Gallipoli?
what I have. G-A-L-I-P-O-L-I.
Two L's, G-A-L-I.
Oh, it's two L's. State, do you recognize our jury?
Yes, Your Honor.
Defense, do you recognize our jury?
Yes, sir.
I think you all could be seated. Members of the jury, once seated again, if you could confirm that you complied with the court's instructions during our break by raising your hands. Record reflect all hands have been raised. Defense, you may call your next witness.
Judge, we would call forensic phone extraction. Officer with the Orange County Sheriff's Department, Officer Wadden, for the stand.
Thank you. We'll bring her in. Good morning, ma'am. Could you state and spell your name for the record for us?
First name is Janella, J-U-N-E-L-L-A. Last name Wadden, U-A, D as in Delta, A-N.
Counselor, you may inquire.
Ms. Wadden, again, your official title?
Digital Forensics Examiner.
And are you referred to as a detective, or what is your...
Just an examiner.
Ma'am, Judge, can I approach the bench, or approach the witness?
Yes, of course.
Ma'am, I'm going to show you what has been marked as identification defense exhibit AA. And you recognize that video or that CD of the video?
Yes.
Well, I think we kind of prepped you on it ahead of time. That was extracted from the Sarah Boone phone that you were asked to extract.
Yes, one of the media files, yes.
Okay, and is that video a fair and accurate depiction of one of the videos that was extracted from Sarah Boone's phone?
Yes.
And then identification Z, defense identification, same type question. You've had a chance to review that video, and is that one of the videos that was extracted from the Sarah Boone phone?
Yes.
Judge, at this time, I'd like to have these introduced in evidence.
Any objections?
No
objection. All right, what was pre-marked as AA will be received into evidence without objection as defendant 17. What was pre-marked as Z will be received into evidence without objection as defendants 18.
Judge, we're going to play Exhibit 17 first.
You may proceed.
And is there a volume? Judge, do you have control of the volume?
Volume is on.
You're going to help me take this shit out. Real shit. You're going to help me take it out. You're going to help me take this shit out. As bad as I want to.
Judge, I'm asking to publish Exhibit 18.
You may proceed. Say again, sir.
You spoke about it earlier.
Yes, understood.
They're tendering, no cross.
All right, thank you very much. This witness can't be released, correct?
Yes.
State?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, can the parties approach momentarily, please? Members of our jury, at this point in time, it's 11:08. I know it's a little bit early, but due to the pacing and how quickly we've been moving through the evidence this morning and how the defense has teed up their witnesses for this afternoon, we do not have anyone until 1 o'clock. So at this time, we're going to go ahead and take our lunch break at this time. I'm going to give you a similar instruction that I've given you over the last couple of days. Jurors, you must not conduct any investigation on your own. This includes reading newspapers, watching television, or using a computer, cell phone, the internet, any electronic device, or any other means at all to get information related to this case or the people and places involved in this case. This applies whether you are in the courthouse, at home, or anywhere else. You must not visit places mentioned in the trial or use the internet to look at maps or pictures to see any place discussed during the trial. Jurors, do not watch local news or read local newspapers. Jurors must not have discussions of any sort with friends, family members, or even your fellow jurors about the case or the people and places involved. So do not let anyone make comments to you or ask questions about the trial. I want to stress again that just as you must not talk about this case face to face, you must not talk about this case by using an electronic device. You must not use phones, computers, or other electronic devices to communicate. Do not send or accept any messages related to this case or your jury service. Do not discuss this case or ask for advice by any means at all, including posting information on an internet website, chat room, or blog. With that, members of the jury, I'm gonna ask you to return here to 12 Alpha at 12:50, and we'll pick up shortly thereafter. Thank you so much for your service. Y'all call may be sent. Thank you. State, anything we need to address?
Nothing, thank you.
Defense?
No, sir.
All right, we'll see you all at 12:50. Thank you very much. Court's in recess. All right, we're back on the record. Case number 2020, CF-2603, State of Florida versus Sarah Boone. Let me get appearances for the state.
Steve Kestrom, on behalf of the state. William J. for the state.
Defense.
James Owens for Sarah Boone.
Tony Henderson, Sarah Boone.
Kevin Beck, on behalf of Sarah Boone.
All right. Ms. Boone is seated at counsel's table wearing the same dark gray suit and maroon blouse from this morning. She is in custody. However, there are no restraints as she will be standing, as with the rest of us, when our jury enters and exits. It's 12:57. State, anything we need to address?
No, sir.
Defense.
Judge, I've got something. Can we approach the bench?
Yes. Calling Dr. Harper at this time. To advise her to be here at 1:30 for her testimony.
Yes, sir.
Just 1 second, sir. Thank you. I'm waiting for Mr. Owens to return. Without Mr. Owens?
Yes,
sir. Sure. All right, as we've discussed, we're not going to be having the charging conference regarding the jury instructions at this time. That will be conducted tomorrow. I have requested the defense to provide any instructions that they are seeking to be provided to the court and to the state in word format tomorrow, including but not limited to 3.6F or 3.6G and any portions thereof that the defense is seeking to utilize for the purposes of jury instructions. The court throughout the trial has been redlining the jury instructions that were provided initially by the state. At the end of the evidence and testimony presentation this afternoon, the court will email those to all parties. Once Mr. Owens comes back in from making advising witnesses of when to be here, we will bring in our jury and proceed with the evidence presentation this afternoon. State, anything else we need to address?
No.
Defense, anything else we need to address?
No, you are.
All right, very good. As soon as Mr. Owens enters, we'll bring in our jury. The deputies will assist Ms. Walker in the wheelchair into the jury box.
Okay. Judge, I've called her three times. I did text her. I don't know if she's in the process of switching rooms.
No worries. We'll cross that bridge at 1:30 if she's not here, sir. Okay. All right, let's go ahead and stand and bring in our jury.
All rise to resume.
State, do you recognize our jury?
Yes, Your Honor.
Defense, do you recognize our jury?
Yes.
All right, everyone can be seated. Thank you. Members of the jury, again, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed your lunch. I see juror number fifth from the right to left, second row. His hand's already out. He knows what's coming. If you can, just raise those hands, confirm you complied to the court's instructions. Record reflect all hands have been raised. All right, members of the jury, the defense is going to continue with their evidence and testimony presentation this afternoon. Thank you. Mr. Owens, you may call your next witness, sir.
Your Honor, the defense calls Ms. Pearl Walker.
Good afternoon. Could you state and spell your name for the record for us?
What did you say?
Can you state and spell your name for the record
Pearl
for
Walker.
Us?
Pearl Walker. P-E-A-R-L. Walker, W-A-L-K-E-R.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Mr. Beck, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Ms. Walker. Ms. Walker, do you know the defendant, Sarah Boone?
Yes.
Okay. How do you know her, ma'am? How do you know Ms. Boone? If you can't hear me, just ask me to repeat myself and I'll do so.
Okay.
How do you know Ms. Boone?
She lived in the same apartment building that I lived in.
And can you tell us how long the two of you shared the same apartment complex, apartment buildings?
About 4 years.
And how is it that you became familiar with Ms. Boone?
My husband and I were sitting out on the porch. And we see her coming with her two dogs.
And what happened then?
Then I will call her over with her dogs.
And what do you mean by call her over?
When I see her walking with a dog, and I see her and I look at her, and I say, "Hey, Sarah, how you doing?" And that's it.
And would she generally respond to you?
Yes.
And how, I won't go there. Would you spend time with Ms. Boone? Would you spend time speaking with Ms. Boone?
Yes.
How long would you speak with her?
About 15 or 20 minutes. That's all.
And was your husband sometimes involved in those conversations as well?
He'd just say hi.
So you and Ms. Boone were the two primary communicators?
Yes, sir.
Okay. In the time that you knew Ms. Boone, did you witness anything about her person or her body that gave you cause for concern?
Sometimes I would see it like she had been choked around her neck or her arm be hurt. I have a mark on her arm, and I just asked her.
And would she describe how that happened?
Just say, I had a...
Hang on. Understand. The objection is sustained.
When you would ask her that, how did she appear to you to respond emotionally to your questions about her injuries?
She just say, one of them days or something.
Objection sustained.
Just for the record, instead of telling us what she would say, would she demonstrate any emotion on her face?
Well, I would see the emotion that she was upset about something.
And did you ask about her obvious upset persona? The fact that she was upset? Would you ask her about that?
Yeah, I would.
Okay, you have to just limit your answer to the question. Would you ask her about that? That issue? About why she was upset?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I just can't go beyond that. Thank you. Now, how frequently would that occur?
I would say on the weekends when I see her.
Was that primarily when you saw her on the weekends?
Mostly I would see her walking through, going to her place, and I'm sitting on the porch and I see her then.
Now, strike that. While you were there, in that apartment complex, and excuse me for getting ahead of myself, do you still live in that apartment complex?
No.
How long have you been gone from that apartment complex? If you don't know, that's fine.
It's been a while. Okay.
Thank you, ma'am. During the occasions that you had to interact with Ms. Boone, how did she treat you?
Objection.
Nice lady.
Overruled.
Nice to me.
Did she ever act uppity?
Objection. Relevance.
Overruled.
Did she ever treat you in an uppity manner?
What you mean, sir?
Did she ever look down on you as a person?
Oh, no.
Did she ever treat you with disrespect?
No.
I'm going to object. This is character evidence.
Sustained.
May I approach on this, Your Honor?
Yes. Objection sustained.
I'm sorry, I'm back, Mrs. Walker. In the time that you and Ms. Boone lived together, on occasion, did you see law enforcement arrive at the apartment complex?
A couple of times.
And did you ever get involved in any of their investigation?
No, sir.
Were you ever approached by law enforcement and asked for information, evidence, insight into what might be going on?
No, sir.
Now, in all candor, were there occasions when you believed that Sarah Boone may have been under the influence of alcohol?
No, I can't say.
Did you also observe George Torres during the time that you lived together, lived there in the apartment complex?
I didn't see him very much. If we sitting on a porch, that's the only time.
See him.
Did you know Mr. Torres very well?
No.
Was there an incident when you saw Ms. Boone with a black eye?
Yes.
Did you witness a pattern between Ms. Boone and Mr. Torres wherein you observed signs of abuse?
Objection. Objection.
Sustained.
You testified that you saw Ms. Boone on occasion with bruises, other injuries, and a black eye. Is that correct? Is that accurate?
Yeah.
And was there any pattern to what you observed in regards to those injuries and bruises that you observed on Ms. Boone?
One time I seen with a black eye and like she had been choked one time.
Okay. Did Ms. Boone complain to you about those marks?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Nothing further.
Any cross-examination?
Hi, Ms. Walker.
How are you?
Is it fair to say you're not sure when exactly you saw any of those injuries on her, correct?
Say that again.
You're not exactly sure when you saw any of those injuries on her, correct?
When she come past the apartment, I'll be sitting out there. We always sit out there.
Right, but we don't know if this is December or 2018 or anything like
that? I can't remember, sir.
Okay. And is it fair to say you have no idea how she got those marks? Is that fair?
Repeat that again.
Do you have any idea how she got those marks?
On the weekends, I see him and her go in.
But you don't know who, if anybody, put those marks on her, right?
Well,
just calls for yes
or
no.
I can tell when they must have had an argument or something. I hear the dogs barking.
Okay. And you're five doors down, right? Unit 8, unit 3?
Yeah.
Okay. No other questions.
Any redirect examination?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Can this witness be released?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Ms. Walker, the deputies are going to come get you and take you out, okay?
You all done?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. Defense ready to call your next witness. Yes.
Thank you.
Rosa Bench?
Yes. All right, members of the jury, witness is running a couple minutes late. I think they may be stuck in the security line downstairs. So we're just going to be in a short recess for them to join us this afternoon. Similar instruction that I've given you, please do not conduct any independent investigation or research regarding the person, places, things, or charge involved. And do not have any discussions amongst yourselves or anyone else, and we'll bring you back in as soon as that witness arrives. Thank you again for your patience.
All right.
Y'all can be seated. Thank you. We'll be off the record until Dr. Harper arrives. Case number 2020-CF-2603, State of Florida versus Sarah Boone. State.
Judge, before we began trial, I had indicated that in the past, historically, types of cases, there were problems with cameras showing attorneys' laptops. It's been brought to my attention that is going on again. I'm asking the court to order whoever it is who has a camera, whether it be a phone, or TV, pool camera, that they not do that.
Okay, all right. Members of the gallery, good afternoon. And the TV crews as well. Information that's contained on both parties' laptops, be it the defense or the state, is protected by work product and attorney-client privilege. It's not something that's viewable, not something that should be disseminated, and not something that can be looked at unless there is a knowing intelligent waiver, and that stuff's going to be put out to the public for consumption. So I'm going to ask you as best as possible not to view, take pictures of, or look at any of the laptops, be it the defense's laptops or the state's laptops, to avoid that. With regard to the camera, if we can, when zooming in on either the defense counsel's table or the state's counsel's table, if we can try to avoid their laptops, I would greatly appreciate you, sir.
And
the podium. Thank you. All right, we are back on the record. Case number 2020-CF-2603, State of Florida versus Sarah Boone. State, appearances for the record.
Dave Kestrow on behalf of the state.
Defense.
James Owens on behalf of Ms. Boone.
Tony Henderson for Ms. Boone.
Kevin Beck on behalf of Sarah Boone.
All right, Ms. Boone is standing at counsel's table wearing a dark gray suit and maroon blouse. Let's go ahead and bring in our jury as Dr. Harper is here.
Continuing coverage in the suitcase murder, the trial of Sarah Boone is on the way from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now.